Hi, I'm Liz Larson.
And I'm Bill McKenna. We're the hosts of the New Life Perspectives radio show.
We're also the creators of the Cogno Movement System, where we help you rewire your nervous system so you can rewire your reality.
Join us each week for great conversations, amazing guests, and cutting-edge information on health, consciousness, and the keys to transformation.
Has it been since you tried to walk a figure eight on the ground? Or have you ever tried to walk a figure eight on the ground? If you haven't, as a grown-up, give it a try. And for fun, have someone watch you. See if you can actually do it. Because the truth is, a lot of us cannot. Now imagine that you were just going to take your finger and draw a figure eight in front of your face. See if you can do it. Now, for fun, have somebody else watch you and see if you can actually do it, because your brain may think you are, and you're absolutely not. You may be making a snake, a squiggly, but not a full figure eight or infinity symbol. And then ask yourself, why? Why are you not able to make that move? It seems so simple. Your brain thinks it knows how to do it. You would imagine that you know what a figure eight looks like or is, but what is the reason that your nervous system is not allowing it? This is the topic for today. Bill McKenna and I are going to dig right in, and you may find it fascinating why you can't.
Well, now I know what you're thinking. You're listening to us and say, what the heck does this have to do with my life? What benefit? Who cares if I can walk a figure eight? Who cares if I can make a figure eight, like an infinity symbol, with my finger? Who cares? Well, you're going to care a lot by the time you get done with this episode. As it turns out, this has everything to do with the different lobes of your brain, your left brain and your right brain. Your left brain has a lot to do with the logical end of things, your mathematics, your calculations, and your right brain has to do with your creativity. And you need both in this lifetime to function in this world. You can get by with either. Everybody knows the super creative types. You know, their hair has a purple streak in it, and they're very creative in everything. Their dress and their food. When they make a plate of food, it's an orchestra of tastes and colors. They're utilizing that left brain. They're maximizing their left brain. The other side of things is that right brain, you know, the engineer, right? The rigid thinking engineer that has a hard time changing their mind, and they need real concrete facts in order to support whatever it might be. So the scientist, the engineer, you know, the people that really utilize those functions. So it can be great to really immerse yourself in one half of the brain or the other, but the quality of your life has to deal with moving information from that logic to the creative to the logic. So, one of the real life things that happens to us is that. And the easiest way to spot this is in somebody else. You know your mom, your dad, right? Your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister, or, you know, family member, or maybe it's a coworker. And if you present a problem to them, you know how they're going to act. You're like, oh, I know what they're going to do, you know? And you know whether they're going to approach it from an emotional perspective or a logical perspective, or they're going to check out and blank face. All of those things are very particular parts of their nervous system, of their brain, and the way that they function. So when very early on, when Liz and myself were going about the creation of Cogno Movement, there was a piece of technology that was thousands of years old that we implemented into Cogno Movement. That technology is called a labyrinth. Well, a labyrinth is not a maze. In a maze, you walk in and you're trying to figure it out. I don't know which way to go, and I'm trying to, how do I get in and how do I get out? Where's the exit? A labyrinth is very, very different. A labyrinth has only one pathway, and all you do is follow the path. You go into this labyrinth, and the way it works is you go in with an intention, like a question, if you will. In the olden days, they looked at it as a prayer. They would walk, it was like a walking prayer. And people would go in and be trying to pray for a particular outcome. In later times, closer to today, you walk in with an intention. I've got a problem. And basically, a prayer is, I want something to be different, please. Just something different. May I please have a different situation here? The reason that these labyrinths were looked at as like, oh my gosh, it's sacred. It's something incredible that's sacred is because when people went into the labyrinth, they ended up getting new answers to the problem. Well, why is that? Why is rooted in your brain and your nervous system? When you walk a labyrinth, it's an amazing device because you walk in and it makes you turn to the left. Now I turn to the left, I walk down a few feet, and then immediately I have a hard U-turn to the left, and then I walk a few more feet and I have a hard U-turn to the right. The discovery here is that it's the mechanism of turning your body physically, U-turn to the left, a U-turn to the right, which physically causes activation of the opposite part of the brain. So, when you go into the labyrinth, there are different lengths of the path. Like I make a U-turn to the left and I'll walk maybe 10 feet. And then I turn to the right and maybe I walk 15 feet. And then I turn to the left, and now I'm walking like 20 yards. It's so there's amount of time that's different, that I'm in the opposite lobe of the brain than I will typically use to solve a problem. Now, the beauty of this is it's so amazing because as you go in with that prayer, I want a different outcome. Or you're just looking at it as my intention. You know, I'm working on any problem. It doesn't matter what the problem is. It could be a relationship. It could be your carburetor. It could be anything. You'll all of a sudden snap. Oh my gosh. You know what? I think that there's a, you know what? I think the carburetor thing, it's actually, you know, this tube, and you know what? And that leads to this, you know, and it's like, oh, I need to check this. You get these new ideas, and they come in a flash. And if you don't make a note, you'll probably forget by the time you leave the labyrinth because this flash of insight, the flash of insight is something that leaves you because it's not an ordinary part of the brain that you usually use. So you get new answers to old problems. This goes back to the basic function of why your parents, all these coworkers, all these people that you know how they act, because they have a well-worn pathway in the brain. Now, back to Liz's question at the beginning here. Why is it that it might be hard for me to actually make a figure eight? A figure eight while walking on the ground is like a U-turn to the left and a U-turn to the right. That's all it is. So it's really the same technology as the labyrinth. The reason being that you get confused is the information literally does not want to flow into that opposite lobe of the brain. Years ago, I remember standing by the edge of the labyrinth, and there would be people in the middle of the labyrinth on the edge of tears. I can't get out. I can't get out. I don't know how to get out. It's like, just hold my hand and we're going to walk right out. There's no barrier. It's a little line on the floor. It's just a line. You just walk right out if you don't like it.
They could have stepped over the lines if they
You can step over a
wanted
line.
to,
It's a
but
painted line.
that's the whole point. That brain organization is not there, and there's a lot of reasons for it. But like you pointed out, Bill, people don't realize how much of an effect this has in your everyday life, and it's massive, actually.
Yeah. It's so simple. It's only one thing. It's only one of the thousands of cognitive movement techniques, but it can impact your life so dramatically. And what we recommend is to get a pad of paper when you're doing it and make a note. Just like, oh my gosh, wow, I could do it this way. And just one line a note and keep going. Keep going and doing it because you'll get all these new ideas. And it's so fun to get a new idea. Right, Liz? You're idea central.
I'm an idea person. It is amazing to get a new idea. But to get a new idea and be able to follow through on that idea, now that's another thing. And it requires the hemispheres of the brain to be able to shift to the left and to the right. Most people don't realize that this is the way the brain grows, and it's a natural thing that happens, is that our brain cycles throughout the day. And even over the days, like for one day, it might be more on the right, and the next day, it might be more on the left. And for children, as their brain grows, that's how it grows. You'll be in the right brain one day and in the left brain the next day. And if a child had no head injuries and no trauma, they might likely be a whole-brained human where completely ambidextrous, completely fluent between both sides of the brain. But that isn't life. And what happens is, as we have little injuries and little traumas and even illnesses, dental work, even surgeries as well, fevers, sunstroke, stuff like that, over heat exhaustion, we get these little injuries to the brain. And the brain starts to have a harder and harder time cycling information, which means that we have a harder and harder time having access to our whole selves. And it affects the way your body moves, your left and right. In cognitive movement, we hear people every day, I have all this problem with my right side of my body. All my problems are on my right side, right? We hear that all the time. We also see people whose eyes don't move properly. They can move all the way left, but they can't move all the way right. Or they're blind on one side. If you've ever gone to get glasses, oh, my left eye, my right eye are different prescriptions, right? The way you're taking in information in the whole world is skewed by this one thing, that the brain is not cycling the way that it can. So should is interesting word, but the way that it is possible to. And the great news is we've discovered many, many ways to get the brain to do this cycling thing that it needs to do. And the figure eight is just one, and the figure eight is also an amazing diagnostic tool. So when we come back, we'll tell a couple of stories about this so you can understand a little bit more why I said have somebody else watch you do it, because you'll think you're doing a figure eight and you probably aren't. So let's hear from the good folks at the UK Health Radio Network, and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So Bill and I are talking about this funny thing about figure eights and labyrinths and walking a figure eight or being able to make a figure eight with your hand. And it turns out that Bill called it a technology, and it's true. And the oldest one on record that we know of is 1200 BC in Greece. But that one is just so well worn that it's still there. But they used it in India as well. There's evidence of it there in, you know, BC. And also, they drew them as well. Did you know this, that they drew them out, that you could do with your
finger?
With your finger?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that is super interesting. The other thing is they built buildings like this. Mm-hmm. Egypt has a couple that are set up like this, like a labyrinth, so that people entering it would have to shift perspective and shift perspective and shift perspective, right?
Yes.
And labyrinths around the world are kind of considered a spiritual thing. Has always been interesting to me. I'm like, it's geometric. Why is it considered spiritual? Well, the reason is that it does kind of make your head feel funny. Some people feel a little dizzy. Some people feel euphoric even. And like Bill said, you get all these great ideas. So, you know, you get the psilocybin experience without the psilocybin, because your brain is having this kind of forced, in a way, shift left and right in a short period of time. And they're also moving usually in a circular pattern. But what's interesting is the one in Greece is actually square. That's interesting too. But it allows this relaxation of the body and this access to more of the brain. And so you have this interesting kind of experience. It feels elevated for some people. Okay, so then Bill was talking about the person who couldn't figure out how to get out. So that's a sign of a brain injury, someone that has a brain that is not able to cycle. So in our practices, we use this as one of the tests. Can you walk a figure eight? And shockingly, a lot of people cannot.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll make a Coke bottle. Like they'll come in and they'll kind of like swerve towards the middle, and then they'll go out, and they basically are making like a this type of movement.
You know?
But they can't cross over that center. That center line is a no-go area to move across and go the opposite.
Yeah, I had a person who did like a squiggle, like a snake, left and right, kind of left and right, and then around. And they did not realize that they couldn't do a figure eight. They really thought they were doing it. Well, it turns out there was a second person in the room, which is really rare. And they were saying, I'm doing it. I'm doing a figure eight. And the other person was like, no, you're not. And they thought it was so weird. They're like, why can't he do a figure eight? Like, well, that's why he was here. He's here for head injury, concussion. But as it turned out, this person is very rigid in their ways, very, very rigid in their thinking when they came into the session. And they'd had a little bit of trauma in their life that really magnified this problem. The problem was there, but until an emotional injury came up, it wasn't as magnified. And so This was one of the tools we used to both diagnose, quote unquote, but also to see if it had been remedied during the session. Well, it turns out that this person was virtually blind on their left side. They could see no peripheral vision and their eyes couldn't move to that side. So of course their brain would not let them move in that direction because it couldn't see. The brain doesn't know where it is. It doesn't know where it's going. This person also had torsion in their body, hip and knee and shoulder on the opposite side. We're all giving that person trouble as well. So after the session, when we sorted all of those things out and created a pathway really for the brain to be able to move left and right, they could easily do a figure eight. Easily, no problem.
And the beauty of this that I want to point out is that the rigidity, you know, Liz said something really important there, the rigidity of your thoughts, which turns into rigidity with other people, right? Where can I go to dinner? Well, you know, we definitely can't be eating this type of food. There's no way, you know, I can't, I won't, you know, and basically you end up with situations in relationship that are difficult. So there are so many things that in cognitive movement you can do to try to alleviate this. And I want to use my daughter as an example. She was really young and, you know, she would not take medicine. You know, she was, she had a cold and you could see she was miserable and everything. And she was like, absolutely no. And she's very young, maybe 2 years old, 3 years old, something like that. And it was one heck of a time. So what do we do? We're like, oh no, you don't want to see him in pain and stuff. So what we did is I did two things. And one thing I did when before she could walk, if there was something that, you know, needed to happen and she couldn't, well, I'll tell you the first one. The first one was drinking a bottle, and I am to blame. I let it go too far. Okay. I didn't listen. And she got hungry, and she got so hungry that, you know, when I got the bottle, it was like, you know, wouldn't, you know, just out of hand, you know, just like, and I know she needs the bottle, but I can't get the bottle in. So what I did is I just had her on the couch, and I took her and I spun her to the left, and then I spun her to the right. And I put her down, and then I was like, okay. And I put the bottle, boom, bottle went in. Just fine. My mom, who'd had 12 kids, is sitting beside me, and she was like, what the? How did this happen? You know, I wish I knew this, you know, umpteen decades ago. But it was the same mechanism as the infinity. I'm moving to the left. I'm moving and spinning more aggressively to the right. But what happens is, for all of us, this is really important, is stress is a left brain function. It's a left brain function. So if I can get the data to flow over to the right brain, then all of a sudden the stress goes down. That's why when people walk a labyrinth, you know, Liz was talking about, this is neuroscience. It's not like, oh my gosh, I had a mystical experience, you know, because I feel so much better and calmer. It's because you were out of the stress part of the brain at the time. So it's a wonderful de-stressing. And everybody out there, you know, you're thinking, you know, I ain't got a labyrinth near me. And furthermore, I don't want to leave my house. You know, you've got a living room and two chairs. You know, just walk, you know, walk around one to the left, walk around the other to the right, and you just make your own. You make your own infinity.
Yeah. In fact, one of our amazing practitioners, Miriam Koutelas, is actually an art teacher at a school. And this is what she did. She created, painted a big canvas, huge canvas, with a big figure eight on it that the kids could walk. And so they do. She has them walk the figure eight to get ideas, to get inspiration. She has them reverse direction. She also has them walk the figure eight if they're struggling, having a bad day, fighting with someone, having hurt feelings or a trauma. They walk the figure eight. And it solves so many of these issues. She's talked about having way less behavioral issues in classroom, way more creativity in classroom. Kids are more reasonable in the classroom. This is the signature of a toddler. Is they're like a terrorist, like they're unreasonable. You cannot reason with them, right? And like Bill was saying, stuck in one hemisphere of the brain, And if you can get them out of that hemisphere just through this very simple movement, add on a little bit of breath, maybe. And now they become reasonable and pliable again. And we see this, like, it seems like we're dumb these days. We've forgotten half of what we know. But how many children's games and stories are circles? I remember with my great grandma, we would do Ring Around the Rosie, which is actually kind of a terrible song. I mean, it's about the plague, I think. It's about ashes or smallpox. Ashes, ashes, we all fall down. They would put ashes in the wounds, But she would play that game with us when we were little. And you would go in a circle one way, and then you'd go in the circle second, the other way, and then everybody would fall down and laugh and get back up and do it again, right? The maypole in circles, Dancing, circles, spinning, right? We knew this. We knew that this was good for the brain and that it was good for learning. And somehow we've just forgotten that technology. And especially with the kids who are looking down all the time on their phones, those brains are not cycling at all. I mean, talk about stuck in a positionality. Now you've got opinions that get stuck, attitudes that get stuck. The eyes are in the down position, so we're now depressed, right? The brain does not get the kind of stimulation it needs by these kinds of movements. So it's one of those things, if you're a parent out there who's listening, figuring out a way to have your kids walk a figure eight or play a game with a figure eight. I mean, you have an attitude problem in your house. This may change it, right?
Oh my gosh. I waylaid myself onto the spinning in the bottle with my daughter, but it was a few years later, there was the medicine one, and where she was like, absolutely not doing it. And what we did was, we did a march. And we did a we I would set up a labyrinth inside the house of couches and different things. So we'd go, around this one, and we march, and it's like, I take my medicine, makes me feel better, and just and we just marched, me and my wife and her, and we marched, we're doing a march, and we would just we walked, basically created a labyrinth, and it wasn't but 5 minutes of that, and she was like, all right, I'm good, I'll take it.
I'll take it.
And it's just like it was like that, and we did not have to fight, we didn't have to do anything. All we did was do a march, and just knowing how the brain works.
Think parenthood makes you have a certain special kind of insanity. We had two of our practitioners, one with an autistic child and one with a baby, who both had an on-ramp and off-ramp that made a figure eight. So they put the kid in the car and drove a figure eight on and off the off ramps.
Yeah, go went back and forth, on
On
ramp,
and off.
off ramp,
And
on ramp, off ramp.
Yeah, it worked. It worked for the child who was autistic to get them out of a stuck place, and the baby too to get them
I
to
forgot about
sleep. So
that.
that was
That is
that's a
such
little
a
bit
like that was such
extreme.
a that was so such a great, I wouldn't, I don't know that I would have thought of it,
No.
but she thought of it, and she was doing on ramps and off ramps,
Yeah,
and she
we
just,
too. Yeah,
yeah.
you that did that. All right, you guys. When we come back, we will talk about some ways that you can actually practice this for yourself, get some real benefit from this. And I want to say that if you are hearing this and you're very interested in getting out of a stuck place with your brain, or there's someone that you know that has definitely had head injury, sunstroke, a lot of surgeries, or a lot of trauma, and want to help them get their brain cycling normally again, get their body moving normally, get their emotions moving normally, reach out to us at cognomovement.com. The place to start is our Essentials program. It helps you do this for yourself. The other way to do it is to hire one of our amazing practitioners to get some support around this for yourself. So let's hear from the good folks at the UK Health Radio Network, and we'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good. UK House Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
And we're back. We're talking about the technology of the figure eight as a diagnostic tool, but also as a way to help you change yourself, change your brain, change the way information is moving. So I think we alluded to this, but our brains and our bodies do tend to favor a side. And it has to do with with many, many things, and we consider it normal. But it may not be normal. We usually have a dominant eye, meaning one of our eyes takes over and takes in the majority of the information. So if you are right eye dominant, you're actually getting information to the left part of your brain predominantly. It's not exclusive for eyes, but predominantly you are taking in information and the left part of your brain is using that information. If you're left eye dominant, you take in the world through the left eye and your right brain is processing that information. So what does that mean? It means that if you're right eye dominant, you're often likely a little more linear in your thinking. You might be good at math. But it's also the part of the body that handles more tension. It handles things with a more tense outlook. If you're left eye dominant and you're taking in information in the right brain, in general, you're probably a little more easygoing, but you also might be a little flaky. It might be harder to organize information in a way that feels resourceful to you. But to be a really well-rounded person, we need both, right?
Yeah, you talked about cycling. There's something super interesting. Again, we forgot so many of these things. Our ancestors had so much information, and it was like, but of course, and then we forgot. And one of those things was our nose. Our nose. So if you breathe in, are both nostrils open? Well, as it turns out, we know that you cycle. Like Liz was saying, your brain cycles. It cycles. Well, it has to do also with your breath. One side will shut down for about 20 minutes. I think I'm correct as 20. It might be they've measured this, but it cycles one side. And then this side will open up and the other side will shut down. This is a normal function in being a human. Well, the breath, right, connects up left brain, right brain. In India, they call it Ida and Pingala. There's a left, the left energy, right energy. But it's very, very real. And for many of us that are predominant in a particular part of the brain, the one area will just start shutting down. And it'll just be always, I've got a plugged left nostril. It's just, I don't know, I got, whatever problem, but it's just always clogged on that side. I'll use my mom as an example. My mom, all her life, I've known her since the beginning, and she used to use this nose spray. I don't know what they call it. Basically, back in the day, in the 60s, 70s, you'd put it in and open up. But she had a chronically always closed one of her nostrils. And anyway, here we are, decades later, and she does cognitive movement, and she's like, both nostrils are completely open. And there's exercises that are out there that people do cross breath with forcing the breath into one nostril and the other. It's called pranayama, but also known just on in the West here as cross breathing, where you plug one and you plug and you breathe in one, out the one, in the other. And anyway, it's proven to have a lot of health benefits. And this is National Institutes of Health type published studies on this. It's not like, oh, that it's some sort of, mystical, magical thing. It's a
But
real thing.
it has been relegated to that. It's pranayama, it's yoga, it's part of a religion. Well, no, it's physiology. Your sinuses are supposed to cycle, and most of ours do not. So the pa practice of alternate nostril breathing does help, but helps with getting enough breath in, but it also helps the brain cycle. But back to the eyes for just a second. This is a problem with glasses. We actually make this situation worse with glasses. Oh, my left eye and my right eye are different. My prescriptions are different. Well, yeah, because the way your brain takes in information on the left and the right are different. And it gets worse and worse because we strengthen one and reduce the other, and vice versa. What we're finding is that when we have people cycle their vision, which you can do exactly the same way as you do alternate nostril, putting your attention through one eye and then shifting your attention fully through the other eye, that the eyes even out. People end up throwing away their glasses, or they go back to the doctor, and the doctor's like, well, actually, we need to lessen your prescription and you're more balanced. Well, it's not your eyeball, it's your brain and the way it takes in and processes information. The other thing is our hands. In school, we encourage kids to be left or right-handed, and kids seem to naturally, they seem to be naturally left or right-handed. I suggest that this is not true, that we put things in a child's hand, one or the other, most likely the right, instead of putting things in both, one time the left, one time the right. So when I was in school, I would actually cycle my hands. One hand would get tired, I would move the pencil to the other hand. Mid-sentence, mid-word, it didn't matter. And they stopped me from doing that. You can't write with both hands. That's a rule someone made. And they put the pencil in my right hand. Well, it turns out I'm completely ambidextrous. I use both left and right hand equally, but through training for different things. So I write predominantly with my right hand, but I can write with my left hand just as well. But when I eat, I switch hands back and forth. If I do makeup, I do one side with one hand and the other side with the other hand. So this is a state that we can train ourselves to be in. So if you write with your right hand, shift and write with your left hand, doodle with your left hand, right? Eat with your left hand, switch back and forth. It's another way of cycling. I think the way my body does it is probably the way that we are naturally intended to. But even in our language, we have this idea about left-handed people, right? It's a left-handed compliment. In
Ooh.
Italian, a left hand is called sinistra, sinister. You know, my mom and her sister are left-handed, and they would say that left-handed kids were retarded or wet the bed, right? We got weird. In some cultures, you only eat with one hand, and the other hand you use to do unclean things with, you know, like wipe or whatever. So, you know, that started it too. But in this day and age, we can use both hands, and we should be, and it'll help our body move information. So all of that might seem a little complicated, but one of the easiest things you can do is start to walk a figure eight. Just do it in your office. You know, walk around two chairs, turn to the right, turn to the left, and reverse it. Three, four, five times with some deep breathing, you're going to find that your mind feels clearer, right? You can actually take a pen and just make a figure eight in front of your face on its side. And notice with a little breath, all of a sudden, your brain starts to cycle because you're moving in front of the left eye predominantly, in front of the right eye predominantly. Now, there are going to be a group of you who cannot do this. Again, like we started the episodes, have someone watch you do it. And if you cannot do it, your brain is not cycling, and you may need help to get out of that pattern. People may be misunderstanding what you're saying. They may find you unreasonable. You know, you may be having trouble in a relationship. You may be having one side of your body that's having a lot of health problems. I mean, there's a lot of signs of this in a life once you recognize what the issue is. And again, in that state, it's hard to fix for yourself. You can, but it's hard to see yourself. So you might get some support to help have you get out of that pattern, get out of that way. What you'll find is that you start to get your whole self back. Don't you think, Bill? You as a whole person reemerges.
It ain't one thing, it's everything. It's all interrelated. Your physical health, your emotional health, your relationships, your business, literally everything. I was years ago, I love beach houses, and if there was one for sale, I'll walk in it any day of the week, just to go in and see the house, on the anyway. There was in La Jolla. There was a house for sale, and I so anyway I got in, because of open house type deal, and I was amazed. It was, and I might have this wrong, but I think he was the founder of Brown University. Or I probably have that completely wrong, but he founded a university, and I was kind of like, wow, that's pretty awesome. And I was in his office. And next to his office was a little kind of an area outside that had a strip of cement, one long strip of cement. And it was very out of place. And I looked outside, and they say, oh, that's where he paced. So he was, you go up one side, turn to the left, you go down to the other side, turn to the right. But this brilliant man who obviously, if you're starting a university and it becomes successful, that's a, obviously a pretty bright guy. Anyway, you can certainly brighten up your entire life by just this one simple exercise. Obviously, we talked about so many other, and there is so much more that we offer at Cogno Movement. Check it out, cognomovement.com. You can start by getting the essentials, and you have a do-it-yourself program there. You watch the videos, follow along, and all of aspects of your life will be impacted.
It's so true. All right, you guys, we've come to the end of this episode. If you try walking a figure eight and have an interesting experience, reach out to us and let us know. You can reach us at Facebook, Cogno Movement is the page, or YouTube, Cogno Movement is the channel, or Instagram, Cogno Movement is also the channel. So reach out to us and let us know what your experience was. Until next time, be safe and be well.
Thanks for being here with us on the New Life Perspective Radio Show. For more information or to find out more about the work that Bill and I do, please visit us at cognomovement.com or email us at info@cognomovement.com. See you again soon.